Welcome to Gospel Tangents, the best source for Mormon history, science, and theology. I'm Rick Bennett. We're continuing our discussion with Dr. Jonathan Stapley. In part three of our discussion with him, we'll talk about the Mormon idea of a priestess, or is it a female priest? Of course, inevitably, that leads us to a discussion of the ordained women movement. In our last conversation, we talked about laying on of hands by women. If that practice was restored, would that be good enough for the ordained women movement? We'll answer that question in our next conversation. Hey, I just wanted to mention a couple of other things. It was really fun to meet people up at the Mormon History Association meetings, and thank you for the kind words, and it was nice to meet some of our listeners. So one of the things I'm thinking about doing is having a Google Hangout. And so maybe just to get to know my listeners, a few of you have kind of mentioned that to me, and you know, I always think, you don't want to listen to me, we're listening to the experts, I'm not the expert. But at any rate, it would be fun to get together, maybe in person, or maybe a Google Hangout. So just wondering if that would be interesting to you. Just send me a quick email at gospeltangents@gmail.com and let me know whether you'd like to do something in person or maybe online. Maybe we could do a Google Hangout or something like that. So just curious about the interest on that. So please just drop me a line. Now back to our conversation. The scriptures talk a little bit about a priestess. Mm-hmm. Could you see an office of a priestess, or if women became ordained, would they still just be a priest?
So I guess what I'll, let me take a step back and frame that within the context of my book, what I would argue, that the term priestess is a function of what I call the cosmological priesthood of the temple. Okay, so I don't follow the theological assertions of, for example, the ordained women movement. So I don't feel like I can fairly characterize what they're asserting. But my sense is that they are asserting for an ecclesiastical parity.
That would be my understanding as well.
And so I would argue that that is they. Even though they might be referencing or they might point to evidence of the cosmological priesthood in the past, they would be pointing to that and making assertions about ecclesiastical priesthood bureaucracy of the present. And so I think that it's important to carry, any time that we're talking about the past and the LDS tradition and the relation between women and the priesthood, we have to make those important distinctions between ecclesiastical and kind of temple cosmological priesthood dynamics. And so that being the case, I think there are lots of ways within the Mormon tradition that is faithful to the revelations and our historical development that can involve women more prominently in our ecclesiology and our liturgy than is currently present. I think that's a non-controversial statement to make. Now, it's way above my pay grade to say like it should be one way or the other. It's not my job.
Well, what about, I'm trying to figure out how to say
sorry,
this.
That's...
No, it's fine. I don't want you to say anything, or I don't want to put words in your mouth. I want you to tell me what you're thinking. But I am curious, this is kind of more of an opinion thing, I guess, if, say, October General Conference, President Nelson got up and said, you know, We've studied Jonathan Stapley's works, and we've looked back at these ritual healings that women used to do. We're bringing that back. Do you think that would be good enough for people like the ordained women?
I have no idea what they are like. If what's good enough? I think that many men and women would like to see greater participation of women in again, in the ecclesiology and liturgy of the church. And I think that the church is aware of that. There's no question they are. And I think it's a concern of church leadership because in the past month, we've seen an expansion of church ecclesiology to include women more dramatically. So now we have young women that are participating in the ministering program, for example, of the church. That's an ecclesiastical expansion. It will, just like at the priesthood reform movement at the early 20th century when they had to create jobs for deacons and teachers, passing the sacrament, taking care of the sacrament table is not a priesthood duty, but we needed a job for these kids to do, so we gave them that job. And it was not without controversy. But I think we have to view this priesthood ministering program as a similar expansion of ecclesiastical duty to incorporate young women. And without question, the new elders' quorum structure is essentially, we can know it works because it's patterned essentially after Relief Society. So Relief Society has been doing it well for over a century, and now the men are more similarly organized. So there's an ecclesiastical shift that theoretically, if you've, there's a recent training video that the church put out on the ministering website that shows the new church structure, you know, with, or the ward structure with the bishop having these certain duties and the Elders' Quorum and Relief Society presidencies together having certain responsibilities. So there is ecclesiastical shifts that will happen and will continue to happen because a church has to renew itself. Mormonism is a brilliant example of a new religious tradition that continually renews itself while maintaining a sense of timelessness. And if you talk to scholars like Steve Taysom, who's brilliant analysis of these trends, new religious traditions and especially liturgy, lived religion, you see successful traditions that are able to adapt and change, but also feel like nothing changes. And, you know, we'll see what happens as far as the liturgy and ecclesiology of our church. I would be shocked if women don't continue to have increasingly expansive roles in those two areas.
Okay.
In my lifetime.
And since you mentioned the idea that blessing and preparing the sacrament are not priesthood functions, and I know in your book you had said something to the effect that, well, look, we allow women to pass the sacrament down the aisle.
Yeah, that's not me saying that. That was the first presidency saying that.
Right.
Yeah.
So could you see maybe in one of these expansions that the beehives and the laurels or
Myomaids
helped prepare the sacrament? Because they used to do that, apparently. That's what you wrote in your book.
Yeah, women used to be responsible for the sacrament table. For sure. And Chris Wright has also written a really beautiful essay on the preparation of bread and the sacrament table by women in I have an essay in the book, so I should remember the title, but Kate Holbrook and Matthew Bowman are the editors. It was produced by UVU Press, and it has an apple on the cover. I think it's called Women in Mormonism, but I can't remember.
I'll look it up for later. We'll post a footnote there.
Yeah.
So could you see that coming back then?
Things don't surprise me, really.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's lots. Mormonism is pregnant with possibilities. And our vitality is a function of our dynamism. So I expect changes in my lifetime. just like I can read the historical record and see the changes in everybody's lifetime. So it's kind of exciting to think about. I hope for general conferences where I'm looking around, seeing if anybody's realizing how big of a deal this just was. I mean, the most recent general conference where they changed the elders' quorum and they changed home teaching, everybody was like, whoa. And I was sitting there thinking, this is like 1968. So I live for that sort of stuff.
Well, great. I'm trying to remember. I remember Greg Prince. I talked to him a few months ago. And I'm curious if you would agree with this statement. He said something that at the time really surprised me. And he said that one of the reasons why men do blessings for health was because the men weren't doing anything. And the women were doing really well, so they took it away from the women and gave it to the men.
No, I would emphatically disagree with that.
How would you characterize that?
It's a tremendously complicated issue. Part of it, there was a centralization of liturgical practice within the priesthood ecclesiastical structure in the 20th century. There's no question about it. Virtually every aspect of church liturgy got shifted within the priesthood ecclesiology of the church. And there's many reasons for that happening. And there's no simple answer. There's no simple answer. Part of it, I don't think consciously anyone said, man, we need something for the dudes to do, so they should bless the sick. Because men, just like the women, had been blessing the sick since the beginning. The question is why female practice or female participation in the liturgy dwindled in the 20th century. And I make my best attempt at following the major trends of why that happens in my book. I think part of it was a focus on priesthood ecclesiology. There was a organizational structure, an organizational principle in the 20th century to organize the church around priesthood ecclesiology, and correlation is the most like familiar aspect of that, which in part got dismantled in the most recent general conference to a certain extent. But the correlation movement restructured the church along these priesthood organizational lines. And a lot of it was in the formalization of the liturgy in the 20th century and the production of liturgical texts and who is the target audience and who's the author of the texts. And it was frequently male authors for male audiences, principally missionaries that are learning how to participate in the liturgy because they haven't had a chance to learn it. Whereas in the 19th century it was men. In the 20th century, it's boys that are evangelists for the church. And to a minority extent, women and young women that are serving as evangelists for the church. But the audience for the authors is the male missionaries. The female missionaries are kind of an afterthought, having just joined the group of evangelists in 1898 officially. So, I mean, it's a long, complex question, and I don't have a simple, straightforward answer. But I would resist anyone that offers a simple, straightforward answer to that question.
Okay. I hope you enjoyed our conversation with Dr. Jonathan Stapley. In our next conversation, we'll talk about Elder Oak's 2014 General Conference address. Jonathan thinks that this was really a groundbreaking address.
When Elder Oaks delivered that sermon, I was like looking around, like, is anyone else? Like, it was like mind blowing. I couldn't believe it. And, you know, everyone else was just like, oh, yeah, this is just Elder Oaks. Revolutions happen sometimes very subtly, apparently.
Thank you so much for listening. Make sure that you like our page on facebook.com/gospeltangents. You can subscribe at YouTube at youtube.com/gospeltangents. We're also on Twitter @gospeltangents, as well as make sure that you subscribe on iTunes so you don't miss any of our episodes. Thanks again for listening. Click here to subscribe, here for a transcript, and over here you'll see some more of our videos. Thanks again.